Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
We know the risks that are involved, and the, you know, with technology, the choice.
I thought it was racist. I thought it was very unfair.
Soy mal querido por Hillary Clinton.
World famous Phil Hendry show. Boy, I don't know what that was about, but it ain't good for the two people singing, I'll tell you that. World famous Phil Hendry show. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. Online at philhendryshow.com. World breaking. Anyway, welcome to the show.
Quit while we're ahead.
And don't forget, as I mentioned, we're online at philhendryshow.com. I was going to say the world famous, groundbreaking Phil Hendry Show, as well as, of course, you know, the place where truth is our bitch, man, because I got some truth to lay on you guys right now. We have Bud Dickman along with Robert Leonard joining us this hour. Man trapped in furnace, amputated own arm to live.
See, I don't understand how any of that will be happening.
You got to amputate your arm because he was going to die.
Yeah, but why would he do that?
Because his arm was trapped. You understand? He couldn't get out, and it was trapped in a furnace.
Was he going to burn up?
Well, let me just read the story here. And this is a rather gruesome story. So if you guys have weak stomachs or sick minds or a sick stomach and a weak mind, or, you know, a collection of both, then please, by all means, stay away from the radio. Get away from the radio. Just turn it down here for a few seconds because man trapped in furnace, amputated own arm to live. This is from ABC News. We mention ABC News because they always like to hear ABC News mention. Surgeons today grafted muscle tissue onto Jonathan Metz's shoulder 2 days after he amputated his arm with household tools to free himself from his basement furnace. Metz's arm had become caught between heating cores inside the boiler on Sunday, according to the battalion chief Matthew Stewart of the West Hartford Fire Department in Hartford, Connecticut, I'm assuming. Where is this man? How come I can never figure out what state these things are in, okay?
Well, it's Hartford.
What doesn't it say in the damn article, man? This is ABC News, Hartford. It could be anywhere. Hartford, California. Hartford, Connecticut. 31. Could smell the flesh of his crushed arm beginning to rot, the telltale sign of life-threatening infection.
Oh, man.
That's right. Floating in and out of consciousness and drinking water that was leaking from the furnace, Metz made a decision that doctors say saved his life. He placed a makeshift tourniquet near his left shoulder and, using the tools he had available, began to cut off his arm. Today's surgery was the first step in fitting him for a prosthesis. God almighty. According to Dr. Scott Elner, the surgeon who operated on Metz at St. Francis Hospital in, oh, here it is, Hartford, Connecticut, "This morning we went back to re-examine the wound. The area around the wound looked healthy and viable. He's in stable condition, and he is in recovery. He is awake, talking, and appreciative. He has a very strong sense of what's going on, and he understands his situation." The surgeon said Metz saved his own life by amputating. The dying tissue would have caused a deadly infection. Now, Elner, who's the doctor, did not know the tools Metz used to sever his arm, but said the cut was very clean for someone who had no medical experience. He was able to preserve blood from, obviously, from bleeding too much, blood from leaking. A small bit of, well, I don't want to get into that. That's just too graphic. The only thing that was preventing him from amputating his arm was some tissue and a nerve. Metz, who lived alone, was rescued on Wednesday after a friend, Lisa DiGregorio, grew worried when Metz did not show up for work and missed a Tuesday night softball game. Metz did not answer the doorbell when DiGregorio stopped at his home on Wednesday, but he said he saw Metz's beagle. Is this a he or a she? Oh, Luca. It's a guy, said Lisa. Luca. But he said he saw Metz's beagle yipping at the back door. DiGregorio called police, who found Metz in the basement. "I was a little worried, especially when the first cop showed up," DiGregorio told reporters. "Then more cops showed up, and then the ambulance showed up, so it got a little nerve-wracking." Firefighters used a spreader, normally used to tear apart cars with people trapped inside, to remove Metz from the furnace. According to the fire department, we use the spreader normally used to tear a car apart. It was pretty old boiler, and this particular unit was very strong. We had to cut a support rod inside the boiler and spread apart the two halves, breaking the cast iron. Cast iron?
Is that strong?
You better believe it's strong. Breaking the cast iron in order to extricate the arm from the unit. After he was free from the furnace, Metz was taken to the hospital. Metz's family lives in North Carolina. And it says here that they, quote, did return calls left by ABC News. But I'm imagining that's a misprint. They probably did not return calls left by ABC News. Otherwise, we'd have a quote here from them. Neighbors described him to the Associated Press as a quiet and friendly man who helped them shovel their driveways after snowstorms. Metz, his case recalls that of hiker. This is the story that I was telling you guys about.
Who's the guy that cut his arm on a rock?
I thought you were lying.
No, this is exactly the story I was telling you guys about. In 2003, hiker Aaron Ralston, who cut off his own arm with a dull knife after becoming trapped under a boulder in a remote Utah canyon in 2003. And many years ago, I had on a guest on my show, I think it was Steve Bozell, who said that he had to amputate his own arm in his own hospital room with one of those plastic knives they give you with your dinner, because the doctors wouldn't cover his insurance or something.
That's got to be bull crap.
Of course it's bull crap, but that's the first time I ever talked to anybody who cut off his own arm. This guy's Steve Bozell. But in any event, you'll notice the only thing that is not in the story is how the hell did his arm get trapped in a boiler? You know, what exactly is going on there? Because I don't know anything about boilers. I grew up and live in California. We just don't have those. And we don't have big, heavy-duty heating units like that. We don't have them that old, that's for sure. And we don't have them made out of cast iron. I have no idea what this poor man, maybe he was trying to maintain the unit. He was doing some maintenance of some kind. But 3 days.
That's the part that I don't know about it.
But you're hitting the microphone. Back up.
That's the part I don't know about, being trapped on it for 3 days.
He wasn't trapped on it.
He was his arm was stuck in it, man.
Yeah, but how?
I don't know. But 3 days later now, this is a badly injured arm. There's no blood getting to it. That's why gangrene began to set in. And that's funky, dude, because that gangrene, that's going to get into the blood. Next thing you know, you got blood poisoning. Next thing you know, you dead.
Well, look at that man found him, too, you know. Anybody cared, he'll live or die, man.
Did anybody find you?
What are you talking about?
What if you got caught?
Well, no, that's a good point he's bringing up. What if you, do any of us know? Like,
That you'd be found.
Well, I'd be found, because I'm supposed to be on the air every night, you know.
Yeah, what about your ex-wife?
That'd be the first person they call, be my ex-wife, probably. You know, what about but you guys? Like over a weekend, if you went missing, butt or your arm got caught in a boiler, that'd be the end of you.
You guys wouldn't look for me.
Oh, yeah, I would. Quit. Don't start crying on me. So that's a nutty story. Here is the story. This is the doctor here, Dr. Scott Elner, the guy that we're talking about, the surgeon who operated on Metz. He spoke to reporters today.
People are often challenged with taking care of themselves. And the way that he did it was frightening, admirable, horrifying, brave. And just amazing to us.
Wow. So that's Jonathan Metz, amputated his own arm. These are more and more. There's two stories. I wonder if this has ever happened before, you know?
What are you talking about?
I mean, there's other cats that have amputated their own arms.
Yeah, that lady at the South Pole.
The lady at the South Pole?
Yeah. Didn't she have to cut something off?
Yeah, she had to cut off one of her boobs.
The lady at what South Pole?
The one down there, man.
Are you talking about that doctor that had, I think she had breast cancer?
Yeah, she had to perform a mastectomy.
Yeah, well, that's really good, bud. You can pronounce that. That's not what happened. She actually biopsied. She cut a piece of the tumor out and sent it up to the States where it was biopsied. But she lived. She's okay.
Well, still, I don't, you know, that to me is really special.
Okay, great, bud. You know, so that lady, she, you know. Anyway, I don't want to read this anymore. It's bumming me out. It's tripping me out. How about the 10 most stressful jobs of 2010?
Cutting off your own arm.
That's stressful job number one, yeah.
What kind of job is that?
The job you have to cut off your own arm. That's what it is. Number one stressful job, cutting off your arm if it gets stuck in a boiler. And then we'll go on down the list to you here. Our number, 877-876-PHIL. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, we have, as you like to hear them, Joran Vandersloot will be talking with us about how everything just sort of fell apart in his world. Coming up here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. You read all about it, huh? Phil Hendry here, 877-876-PHIL. Coming up, we have Joran Vandersloot, as you like to hear him. What, bud?
Because then the machine gun hit him and everything and spun him around.
Talking about that Japanese guy?
You're talking about Daniel Inoue?
Yeah.
He's from Hawaii. He's a Japanese-American from Hawaii.
Yeah.
So then what happened?
Then he come up and he threw a hand grenade. He blowed up a bunch of Germans. Then he come up again more and more and more and more. And there's nothing they could do, and they machine gunned him and everything.
You know, but if they wrote that down on the Congressional Medal of Honor he won, that wouldn't make any sense at all.
What are you talking about?
He kept coming and coming and coming, and then he blew him up, and he blew, blew, blew. You know, I mean, what happened, man?
He came up on a German machine gun nest, and he threw a hand when they blew them up. Then they come and they shot out his arm and everything, got no arm left, and they threw another hand grenade and blew up another one.
Inoue did what? He killed a bunch of Germans with one arm, right?
Yeah, with one arm.
Oh, okay. Well, that's very good. And he won the Congressional Medal of Honor.
Yeah, he lived to come back, and he landed in the same hospital as that other one-armed man. I forget his name.
The guy that ran for president? Well, he ain't one-armed, but he might as well be.
You mean Bob Dole?
Yeah.
Why don't you have a little bit of respect, okay?
What?
He ain't one-armed, but he might as well be.
The guy that's always holding onto the pencil.
I know who it is, and they were both in the same hospital, huh?
Yeah.
Of course they were. They were both in the same part of the war. They were in Italy, both of them. You know what? They have a little bit of respect, though, man.
What would I do?
He's the guy that did the one arm, but he might as well be.
All right, the 10 most and least stressful jobs of 2010 you might want to know about. And know what the number one is not, you know, cutting your own arm off after it's been stuck in a boiler. And somebody wrote in on our website, they said, Phil, when you do these lists, could you do it from 10 to 1 instead of 1 to 10 on account of it makes it more exciting? And I wrote back, you bet. And if I can do anything else for your life,
wow,
you let me know. Anyway, here is number 10, the most stressful jobs there are. Number 10, boy, I should say so, real estate agent. All right. Real estate agents and brokers work long, erratic hours, spending much of their time showing properties to clients, clients who have no intention of buying, and they're busting their ass, and they haven't made a sale in 6 years here in this whole economy. Anyway, they must be extremely independent. They must be able to handle sales quotas and deadline pressures. Because they work in an extremely competitive field, successful agents and brokers are expert salespeople. But that is the 10th most stressful job, being a real estate agent, although the payoff is pretty good. Number nine, but nowadays, man, it's...
Why?
Nobody's selling any houses, man. We're in a recession. I'm choking. I'm sorry, guys. The beginning of the show, and now we're at the end of the show, and I'm like, I've got this frog in my throat. Hold on. All right. Number nine, advertising account executive. Although not physically demanding... work in advertising is emotionally and mentally stressful. Competition and the pressure of acquiring and maintaining major accounts forces executives in this field to work long and irregular hours. The work requires a high level of creativity. Not really. And I hate to say that, but the ad agencies I've worked with, this is what happens. They come to you, the air talent. They ask you to write the spot. They ask you to produce the spot. And then they take their piece. Anyway, that's the advertising agencies that I've traditionally worked with at local radio, but I'm sure that they're talking about Madison Avenue here. Anyway, they're probably talking about the Mad Men, right?
Yeah, the Mad Men.
Competition and the pressure of acquiring and maintaining major accounts forces executives in this field to work long and irregular hours. The work requires a high level of creativity, meeting deadlines, close attention to detail, and self-motivation. Advertising account executive. The real estate agent. The advertising account executive, number nine. Number eight, public relations officer. I can see that. being a public relations person, man, you've got more guys breathing down your neck. This guy wants something. That guy wants something. Somebody calling you up. Hi, this is Harry from the so-and-so newspaper, man. You got a quote for the, you know. Public relations specialists make speeches and they give presentations, often in front of the large crowds. Because it is a highly competitive field, specialists must work quickly and creatively to meet deadlines. In addition, some PR officers are required to interact with potentially hostile members of the media. And, of course, they also represent. They are not the entity themselves. They are representing the entity. It could be a political candidate. It could be a company. How do you think the PR guy for BP is doing these days?
Oh, man. That guy.
Yeah, you'd get it from all sides.
That poor bastard, I bet you he hasn't slept in weeks. The PR guy for BP? Give me the name of that guy. There must be some guy they're quoting. All right, so that's number eight. Number seven, what do you think the seventh most stressful job?
I think there's got to be a cop in there somewhere.
You're right. Highway patrol officer. Highway patrol officer. Not city cop, not county cop. Highway patrol officer. And in some states, it's a state patrol or it's a state trooper. But you know what I'm talking about. Highway patrol officers often work late nights, and on weekends and holidays, they face many hazards, such as high-speed chases and gun-toting citizens. Work requires physical stamina and close attention to detail, and officers have the added stress of handling life-threatening situations and being in the public eye. And then, of course, you're at the side of the road, and you're helping somebody with a flat tire, and along comes some drunk and rear-ends you and the car you're helping out, and you're dead. How many times has that happened to these poor guys?
You're talking about a highway.
Highway patrol, man.
Oh. I didn't know that.
I just got done telling you. I said not a city cop, not a county cop. Highway.
Yeah, you got done telling you.
I didn't hear it.
All right, Here's number six. Member of the Communist Party. No, I'm kidding. It's commercial pilot. Art Griego should be on here to talk about this. Number six most stressful job is commercial pilot. Commercial pilots are under pressure to guarantee the comfort and safety of passengers while staying within flight schedules, even when flying in inclement weather. Working irregular hours and on varying routes forces pilots to lay over in other cities, leading to frequent jet lags. A commercial pilot. Number five, public officer. What's that? Police officer, excuse me. We already did public relations. Number five is police officer. Not highway patrol. Now we're talking about police officer. This would be a city cop maybe or a sheriff. Police officers face potentially life-threatening situations daily. Shifts can be long and strenuous, especially in emergencies, and work requires both physical and emotional strength. Other possible stress factors include interacting with the public and providing medical attention to injured parties. I'd like to compare that with the highway patrol guy just to see the difference, because it seems like the same.
Yeah, what's the difference? I mean, one of them, the guys stand on the highway.
Yeah, the highway patrol guy's got to stand out on the highway. I think that's like more dangerous. But anyway, number four, most stressful job, surgeon. That's a doctor who operates on you.
Yeah, I was going to ask you what that is. What?
Are you kidding me, man?
I know what a doctor is.
You don't know what a surgeon is?
No, I didn't. It's my mom. They got the eggs?
The eggs? What are you talking about?
With the cream cheese?
That's a sturgeon, you jackass.
That's a sturgeon, man. That's caviar.
But that's what it was.
Surgeon, man. These are guys that operate on people. Surgeons... Is it the one with the eggs? Surgeons can be required to work at odd hours, and many operations take hours to complete. Operating calls for extreme precision and attention to detail, and can require quick decisions with life or death consequences. In addition, rising malpractice insurance costs are a major cause of stress for many surgeons. Number three is, I just thought that was an interesting little political point they threw in there. Number three is taxi driver. Taxi drivers generally work erratic hours. It's the third most stressful job, working as a taxi driver. They work erratic hours, including late nights and weekends. High-speed driving in traffic, especially in major cities, is quite dangerous. They don't have to go fast, but the other guys are too, so I don't know. And they, especially those cats in New York, man, it's like you might as well be on a freeway. And they frequently drive in bad weather conditions as well. In addition, taxi drivers are confined to their vehicles all day with a supply of cash, making them vulnerable to criminals. Number two, senior corporate executive. What is that about? This highly competitive field requires detailed knowledge of the financial community, economic trends, as well as technological developments and implications. Senior executives are expected to excel in many different areas at once and face daily pressure to make far-reaching decisions. And finally, the number one most stressful job is what?
Firefighters.
Don't take it from me, man.
You're not supposed to grab it.
Well, I saw it.
Firefighter.
I said it.
No kidding. Firefighters frequently work irregular or unusual hours or remain on call throughout the night, and the most stressful job is being Bud Dickman, because during the break, Phil Hendry's going to strangle him. All right.
Yeah.
Don't grab the thing from me, man, okay? Coming up next, Jeron Vandersloot, as you like to hear him. Special interview, quote-unquote, on The Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
Like to hear them on our show. We bring you the top newsmakers of the day in a far-ranging conversation and Q&A on why they're in the news. And joining us on our show tonight, as we close the program out, obviously somebody who is of terribly controversial notoriety, and that is Jeron Vandersloot, joining us now from his jail cell in Peru. Mr. Vandersloot, how are you?
Not good. To be honest with you,
I can understand that, sir. Thank you for joining us on our program here. I would have to ask you, and I have to ask you this question right out of the gate: did you kill Natalie Holloway?
Yes, I did.
All right, so you don't have any problem admitting that?
No, I do have a problem admitting that. I do, but I'm telling you, yes, I did, because I did. And
so what's the game here, then, man? You know,
well, the game is a familiar one among psychopaths. Yes, I killed her. I have information as to where her body is. I know how she died. But there's a little bit of a, if you ever saw this deal, and I don't like to give too much, I don't like to give too many kudos to competitive personalities, if you will, even if they are in the movies. But you remember this movie, what the hell was the movie with Buffalo Bob?
Buffalo Bob. I don't know.
Buffalo Bob.
You mean the Dabney Coleman?
Dabney Coleman? No, I'm talking about Buffalo...
Buffalo Bill? You mean Silence of the Lambs?
There you go. Silence of the Lambs, when the guy said quid pro quo, Clarice. Quid pro quo, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm looking for.
Just tell me the name of the movie, man. What do you mean, Buffalo Bob?
I didn't remember it. I didn't know what it was called.
All right, so you're going to play games with this poor woman, right? You're going to play games with Natalie Holloway's mother? Is that what you're going to do?
I'm going to try. I mean, you can't fault a guy for trying. That's in my nature as a psychopath. But I'm very happy to deliver information to the family if they can, you know, what do you got for me?
And you know you're not going to get out of jail, man. You know that.
I don't know. I'm in Peru. I'm not in Supermax, man. I'm in Peru. You know,
Peru? What, do you think it's going to be easier for you to bust out in Peru?
Maybe. Maybe it's going to be easier to pay somebody off. Maybe it's going to be easier to buy me a couple of prison wardens. Maybe it's going to be easier for me to buy me a couple of cops. See, these are the things that you don't think about, because you think I'm some dumb Dutch boy, don't you?
Look, I never...
No. I know how it is. I know how the ball game's played. You guys in the States think I'm some dumb guy wearing wooden shoes. And because my old man's dead, and my windmill is busted, I'm ready to bend over for every Peruvian. No. That's not how we're going to play this. The way we play it is like this. First of all, I got information.
No, nobody's calling you a dumb Dutch boy. Where'd you get that?
Because I know the way you guys think of me. You think I'm some kind of a squarehead in wooden shoes. But let me tell you something. I know where. You know I killed her.
Have you told the cops you killed her?
No. No, I haven't.
Why not?
Because I got to get a little something going. I'm not going to come right out and say, yeah, I did it. They want me to tell them what's up. Fine. They want me to tell them this, that, something else. I mean, I don't know how graphic you want me to be.
No, I don't want you to be very graphic.
Okay. But the fact is, I got information, they need it. So they're going to want me at some point to spill, and I'm happy to spill, but this is not going to be a free... There's no free meals here, you know.
What is it about? All right, Kay, I know you're a psychopath.
Yeah, exactly.
So you don't have any feelings.
Thank you. I got to keep reminding you idiots of that.
Oh, well, I do have feelings, okay?
Did I hurt your feelings? Did I hurt your feelings? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to call you an idiot.
The fact that I'm even talking to you here is because I've got feelings. I feel for someone that you killed. Now, this Peruvian girl, what happened there?
I killed her.
Now, I know that. Why?
Because she started getting nosy, that's why. She says to me, what's with this and what's with that? And
well, what did she find?
She found some entries and some photographs. She found a log that I was keeping, a journal that I was keeping. She found some pictures. And she started hassling me. I tried to talk my way out of it. I tried to tell her, no, you're all mistaken. This computer belongs to somebody else. She didn't buy that. And then I said, now let's go take a look. Let's go downstairs and I'll buy you, a Big Mac or something. I don't know what. She, no, no. I said, how about we watch a movie? No, no. So I had to kill her. But you guys ask me these questions. Why did I do it? What choice did I have?
Well, here's a choice. You could have turned yourself in for Natalie Holloway's murder and we wouldn't have to be talking about any of this stuff. So you kill this girl?
Of course.
Of course, and this is for self-preservation?
Yeah. Yeah.
Human beings to guys like you are nothing more than...
Well, you said it once, and I heard you with this guy, Stone.
Dr. Stone, thank you very much.
All right. Excuse me, Dr. Stone. That killing people for guys like me is like carving a Christmas turkey. You're right. Although I don't really like Christmas. It's like carving a Easter ham. That's how I think about it. You may... There might be other guys, you know. Some guys may think it's like, oh, I don't know, grinding hamburger. Some guys may...
I get the general idea. So you believe, you have no feelings there, so you believe the best thing to do is to kill her. And
well, I didn't want to do it, see, and I tried to tell the cops that. I said I didn't want to have to do it, and I said to them, how come you guys are leaning on me? She made me do it. And I said, come on, can I cop a plea here? And these coppers are looking at me like I'm stupid.
Of course you're sounding stupid to them.
Why?
Because there's no cop is going to say that, no cop is going to buy that you were somehow coerced or pressured into killing that girl by her. They're just not going to buy that.
Why not?
You don't understand, do you?
No, I don't. I mean, I said to them, I had to kill her, and they're looking at me like I'm garbage. So why is that?
Because you don't have to kill anybody.
I did.
No, you didn't. No, you didn't. No, you didn't.
Okay, I get it. So if I didn't just turn myself in, that's not going
to
happen.
Well, that's why the cops don't listen to guys. You trying to tell them that you had to kill her as if you're going to try to get some kind of love from these guys?
I'm not looking for love. I thought maybe what they would do is let me cop a plea or something. But they said, oh, well, we don't understand and all this jazz. I said, you got to listen to me. She found the stuff on Holloway. There was nothing left for me to do but kill her. I was backed into a corner.
No, they're not going to buy that, man, because people don't think the way you think. Do you understand? This is why cats like you wind up in jail all the time.
No, they don't. No, they do not. You know the guys that got away?
Who?
I don't know, but do you know who they are?
To the extent that guys got away, okay, I admit...
There you go. Some guys got away.
Well, you ain't one of them there, Joran, okay?
And that's another thing. I've been listening to this Vanderslut and Vanderslut. Can't... I get it already, okay? Can't people do the name so that I don't sound like I don't sound like 300 yards of scumbag?
Look at Mr. Vandersloot. You killed this girl because she found incriminating stuff on your computer about Natalie Holloway. I already told the cops that. And then you walked out of that hotel room leaving the body there. Didn't you realize that this was something that was going to eventually track to you?
Look, you're dealing with Peruvian cops. Now, on any given day, you can get away with a mass slaughter in that country. On a good day, you can rob six banks, kill everybody in each bank, and you're in Brazil the next day in a hotel room. There's no clue. I happen to, you know...
You caught him on a bad day, huh?
No, I caught him on their good day. It was my bad day. But you can't figure cops. You sure as hell can't figure Peruvian cops. I figure my best chance... was to get out of there. And
what about all the cameras?
I thought I could slip them.
See, here's the thing, Jerron, that a lot of people are learning. They're learning a lot about guys like you. Do you understand that?
What does that mean?
What it means is people are learning a lot about the psychopath.
Well, I don't know. What do you mean psychopath? Is that,
you don't have any feelings. You don't know how human beings work. You were either born without feelings or you eventually had them sucked out of you. You have to mimic other people and their behavior. You know.
Where do you get an idea that I don't have any feelings? Are you high? Of course I got feelings. You know where I'm sitting right now, man? I'm in a Peruvian jail.
Don't fake your anger with me, okay?
I'm not faking anger. That's the one emotion I can feel. And I'm in a Peruvian jail right now. You want to know why? Because some chick couldn't keep her mouth shut.
How about this? Maybe it's you're in there because of you.
No.
Yeah, see, that's it. Nothing's your fault, man. You're in that jail because some girl couldn't keep her mouth shut about Natalie Holloway, and you had to kill her.
I had to. You don't understand. Are you telling me you can't figure that out?
Dude, I understand why you think that way.
Huh?
I understand why you think that way, because it's all about you. It's all about you, and human beings are just things that you cast aside.
So that's it. You got me painted as a psychopath. Is that it? Is that what it is, huh?
Well, you know, you fit the profile there, Jor. How do you pronounce your name, by the way?
Joran.
Like Joanne?
No, not like Joanne. Joran. Like you see Superman?
Yeah.
Like the guy from, Superman's dad.
Was that his name, Joran?
I think so, yeah. That's what they say they named me after.
Your parents named you after Superman's dad?
That's my understanding, yeah.
I mean, that's pretty freaky, don't you think?
Gotta name a kid something. It's a lot better than Dweezil. This guy, what's his name, Frank Zappa? Dweezil? My father named me after somebody that lives on a planet, he was the king of the planet. Dweezil, I don't know, what is that, Dweezil? Dweezil's the sound your stomach makes when you're hungry. So the point that I'm trying to make here, I wouldn't be where I am. Now, all I gotta do is I gotta find me a Peruvian cop that sees it my way. Yeah, I grease him up a little bit, and you know money is not going to be an object for me, okay? My mother's loaded. I got relatives back in Holland, and it's all good. But as long as I'm giving out interviews to guys like you, I thought you were going to do something that was going to be a sympathetic piece, you know?
What, like a puff piece?
Well, yeah.
Well, what am I going to say, man? You want me to come on here and say, here is Joanne Vandersloot, this poor guy, I mean...
Yeah, exactly.
Poor guy, he had to kill this girl, he had no choice because she found the stuff about Natalie Holloway, and if they just let this guy go, he can go back to Aruba and keep killing girls there at Carlos and Charlie's, wherever the hell that was.
Pretty much, yeah.
And you want the cops to know that, huh?
No, I don't want the coppers to know that, but that's the life that, you know, ideally, but I guess, I don't know.
I think you're going to rot inside jail, man. You ain't never getting out, man.
You watch. You watch.
I watch, huh?
I'll find a way. And I'll tell you another thing, too. Like I said, I got the info that those people want. This is going to cost. No free lunches anymore.
Well, you know, they don't care, man. They got you for the murder of this girl in Peru. You can stay inside that dungeon or that jail cell or that cage they got you in until you rot, man.
Yeah, but they want to know who did the Holloway thing.
They know who did it.
Well, they want to know where she is.
Maybe. But maybe there's a limit to their patience, too. They know it's you. They know you did it. You're in jail. And I don't know what the death penalty thing is, but...
They're not going to... You think they're going to stretch my neck? No way.
And you think you're going to bust out?
Don't worry about it. All I need is one dumb flat-foot bull in this dump. Okay? I buy that guy, I got it made. Do I get paid for this? Or
no, I don't pay interviewers. You know, I don't pay for interviews.
You don't pay?
No, and you know that.
All right.
Anyway, thank you very much, Mr. Vandersloot, for being with us here on the show as we continue here.
Vandersloot, I got the name right.
Very oily guy.
Yeah, I don't like him.
Who's that guy with a funny voice?
Up on him. The Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
Bye.
Phil Hendry.
You know, that poor girl, and welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, that poor Peruvian girl... that was with this guy Vandersloot. Now, apparently, she was looking at a laptop computer owned by him and found this stuff.
Yeah, but what's she doing on it and everything?
Maybe she asked you to look at her email.
You think? I don't know, you know.
Well, you're crazy or something? He would have killed her.
What do you mean killed her, man? If she asked to look at her email.
I don't know if she asked to look at her email. He was out, came back, and she was looking at this thing. Now, there's a lot of different ways you can look at this, and I don't want to, I'm not going to second guess or say anything other than this. You know, there were a lot of different things she could have done. She could have just minded her own business, and I don't know what she was doing on the computer, if in point of fact he had given her permission. She could have played dumb, but I believe she confronted him. And this Vandersloot, he was charged last Friday with first-degree murder in connection with the May 30th death of 21-year-old Stephanie Flores, who was found beaten to death. The judge ordered he be prosecuted as the perpetrator of the alleged crimes of first-degree murder and simple theft. He was transferred to the Castro prison in Lima. Police source told media that Vandersloot has confessed to killing Flores in his hotel room in a fit of rage, saying she used his laptop without permission. Okay. Of course, this is him saying, you know.
Yeah, he's probably lying through his teeth.
Vandersloot had long been a prime suspect of the disappearance of Natalie Holloway. You know, Rance's theory, I think, is a very good one.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's a great theory.
Rance thinks, and I agree with him, this murder was committed on exactly the same day that Natalie Holloway went missing, 5 years later. So this is one of those real weird-ass, pathological psychopathy things, man, where he, like it's an anniversary killing, like it's part of that whole trophy-taking thing, where these guys have these memories that jazz them up and get them all hot. I mean, they're real strange people, not to mention murderous. And this girl dying on exactly the same day.
So that means he was planning on killing a girl and everything.
If that's the case, then it's got nothing to do with whether she was using his computer. It's got nothing to do with whether or not she was found stuff about Natalie Holloway. He planned on killing this girl on this day. And if that's not first-degree premeditated murder, and if they've got a death penalty in Peru, unlike the Natalie Holloway, they don't know, you know.
What are you saying?
What do you mean, what am I saying? I just spit it out.
Yes, but what are you saying?
What do you mean, what am I saying? Did you guys just hear what I said?
What?
I said that Rance thinks, and I agree with him, that this guy killed this girl on the five-year anniversary of the killing of Natalie Holloway. It's a psychopathic brand head trip that these cats get into. They like the trophy thing. They like the anniversary thing. It gives them emotional sensation. Okay?
Yeah, but what about the thing about being premeditated? I don't see how.
Are you an idiot or something, man? If the guy was planning on doing a five-year anniversary killing, it would have to be premeditated, wouldn't it?
Oh, okay.
So therefore, it's premeditated, and the computer and the so-called Natalie Holloway material, all that stuff, that's bullcrap, man. That he's lying to those cops. He's trying to come up with some excuse so the cops don't think it's first-degree premeditated murder. Oh, well, and of course he's an idiot. He's a psychopath, so he doesn't understand how normal people think. He thinks if he lays this on the cops that he got angry she was on his computer, that they'll have some kind of compassion for the guy.
They'll show mercy on account of, well, I understand how you killed her. She's looking at your email.
Yeah, right. In that guy's head, the cops are going to go, oh, wow, oh, okay. I mean, you're still guilty, but, you know. A Dutchman charged, this is this guy, the Dutchman charged with the murder of the Peruvian woman will tell police where to find the body of a U.S. teen who disappeared in Aruba in 2005, a senior Peruvian cop said on Friday. General Cesar Guardia, who's leading the investigation into Jeroen Vandersloot's role in the murder of a Peruvian woman, said the Dutch citizen had let slip that he knew the whereabouts of 18-year-old American Natalie Holloway. But Vandersloot told Peruvian police he would only talk about the matter with Aruban authorities, according to this cop. He revealed it during an informal conversation. He said he knew where the young American is. He could be lying six different ways to sunset, man. Earlier, Guardia told U.S. Network ABC that Vandersloot had agreed to provide information about the case, which attracted huge media attention to the United States, the Caribbean, and all of that jazz. But the girl was never, but the case was never solved. Duran is ready to discuss this wherever officials from Aruba, whenever officials from Aruba can come to Peru, according to this cop.
Sounds like he's got that cop thinking that he's going to do that.
That cop can't be that stupid. Can't be that stupid. There's no way.
Yeah, but he's in Peru, man.
He's in Peru, so he's automatically a stupid cop, huh?
Well, I mean, come on.
Maybe he's saying all this stuff to make this guy Vandersloot think that he's got these guys wrapped around his finger. Anyway, Vandersloot was charged Friday with a first-degree murder in connection with the May 30th death of 21-year-old Stephanie Flores. This girl was killed on purpose. He knew he was going to kill this girl when he brought her up to that hotel room.
She supposedly is a lesbian. I don't know if that mattered or not.
I don't think so. I think an ego-tripping bastard like this, he probably thinks he can score with any chick. You know, so I don't think, this whole this baloney about how she went into his no, this is a gruesome anniversary murder committed by this guy.
Sounds like a good book or whatever, I don't know.
Yeah, okay. Well, thanks a lot, bud. Clean this dump up, okay?
It's not my turn. I'm going to do it.
Well, one of you guys, okay? We'll be back on Monday. Don't forget our website, philhenryshow.com. Take a look at our live streaming video and audio any night. We have our video archives 5 days and, of course, our regular archives. Tomorrow night, 6 p.m. Pacific time, we may have Tequila Saturday Night, a sixth-day video cast. Our show is produced by Jason Rance, technical director Ralph Rodriguez. Our screener is Dan Northcraft. Phil Henry, later.
Coming in the name of...
Phil Henry.